For many of us, seeing the beauty in other people, being kind and compassionate towards other people, that comes pretty easily. But what's really hard is seeing the beauty in ourselves and being kind and compassionate consistently towards ourselves, especially when difficult things happen. Perhaps someone's critical of us, or we make a mistake. We beat up on ourselves. You could call it the inner critic, or that voice in the head that says mean things. Or you could call it self-hatred. What can we do in these circumstances to interrupt this cycle and learn to befriend ourselves consistently? Sounds True has created the Self-Acceptance Project to investigate this question. We've invited the participation of spiritual teachers, psychologists, neuroscientists, visionary writers, all to look at how can we learn to be kind and compassionate towards ourselves on a consistent basis. Thank you for joining us and welcome. In this episode, I speak with Jeff Foster, one of the youngest spiritual teachers ever to be published by Sounds True. He's the author of 4 books and with Sounds True has published a book and an audio series called The Deepest Acceptance, Radical Awakening in Ordinary Life. My name's Tammy Simon, and I'm your host for this series. And in our episode today, I'm so pleased to be able to welcome someone whom I consider a friend, and I'm so glad he's part of the Self-Acceptance Project, Jeff Foster. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Tammy. It's so great to be here.
Now, as we're speaking, you're in the UK right now, yes?
I'm in the UK, yeah. I just got back from 2-3 months in America, so I'm slightly jet lagged. So if I fall asleep during this interview, then
I'll accept it completely.
You'll accept it, yeah. You'll have to.
Okay, well, let's get right to it then. On the cover of your book, The Deepest Acceptance, there's an image of a wave, and I know one of the central metaphors that you work with in your teaching is this idea that we can accept everything just the way that the ocean has already accepted the same fabric of being that the waves are. The waves, the ocean, it's all one thing, that we can accept our own experience just like that. And my question to you is, I think even people who are familiar with that teaching, it's a classic image from the world of spiritual teaching about how we're not really separate. Even people who are familiar with it get into these situations where they just feel terrible about something that's happening in the moment in their life. And they feel terrible about themselves. And that teaching doesn't seem to help very much. So what can you say to someone who's in that situation?
Yeah, that's really a great question. You know, 'cause when you're suffering, when you're in pain, you know, when the moment is not pleasant, when the moment is filled with confusion and doubt and even despair. I mean, sometimes all the spiritual teachings in the world, you know, all the metaphors in the world, all the lovely phrases, you know, I'm not separate from life and, you know, everything is oneness, they just don't help. You know, they just feel so far away from our experience, you know, knowing intellectually that we're not separate from life. I mean, it can help sometimes, but just so often it doesn't. It just remains, it's words, you know. I mean, you can believe all you want to that, as you said, that you're not separate from life. But the truth is, you know, sometimes we feel, I mean, you're right, we feel totally separate from life, totally, you know, at war with life even, at war with this moment, disconnected, separate from the moment, separate from the ones we love, you know, separate from other people. So, you know, what I always say to people, and this is really the essence of what I teach, is, you know, begin exactly where you are, that's where we have to start always, no matter what's going on in your life, you know, no matter what's going on in the drama of your life, you know, the movie of your life, no matter what happened yesterday and may or may not happen tomorrow. I think true healing has to begin with saying yes to this moment, affirming this moment, aligning with this moment. Even if this moment is full of doubt, as I said, and confusion and pain, and even if right now there's just a sense of not knowing who you are anymore, or not knowing what to do, not knowing where to go, even if right now there's a sense of, you know, there's like a sinking feeling in the stomach. Okay, so let's begin there. Let's not reject that. Let's not make that into the enemy. Let's say, yes, that's what's here right now. Yes, right now there is confusion. Right now there is a sinking feeling in the stomach. You know, right now there is doubt. Let's not skip over the moment. Because this is often what I say, you know, if we run away from this moment, if we reject this moment, if we skip over this moment, you know, if we try to push away this moment, we may just be pushing away something precious. You know, we may just be pushing away something intelligent. We may just be pushing away the intelligence of life itself. So, I mean, this really goes to the core, I think, of what I teach is, even if right now in this moment there's sadness or fear or even despair, or even that sinking feeling in the stomach I was talking about, it may just be intelligent. It may just contain all the intelligence of life itself. It's like the last place we would ever look, right? Because that's what we're taught as we're growing up. You shouldn't feel sad. You shouldn't feel lonely. You shouldn't feel despair. You shouldn't feel boredom. You shouldn't feel confusion. So we're growing up, we're taught, here are all the things you're not supposed to feel, or even you're not allowed to feel. And so we carry that conditioning with us, you know, as we grow up, and we don't look at it. We don't question it. We just assume that that's true, that there's some feelings, there's some thoughts we shouldn't have, and there's some feelings we shouldn't have. So our habit is to turn away from the moment, is to distrust what we're experiencing. It's really what we learn. We learn to distrust our own first-hand, real-time experience of life. So this is what I say to people. You know, begin where you are in every moment. Begin where you are. So if this moment contains sadness, if this moment contains confusion, perhaps, just perhaps, it's not a mistake. And just perhaps this feeling or this thought is not a block to awakening. Just perhaps, you know, this thought, this feeling, this present experience contains intelligence.
So Jeff, let's talk a little bit about that intelligence, because I'm imagining someone listening and they're saying, okay, the sinking feeling, whatever might have created in them, whatever situation in their life has created this sinking feeling in the stomach. Okay, mm-hmm. I get it. For the deepest acceptance, the title of your book, for any kind of acceptance, I have to admit this is actually what's going on and I have to be with it. But how do I access the intelligence in it? It just seems like I feel overwhelmed with inner yuckiness. Where's the intelligence?
So this is really the problem with words, you know. So the mind is such a tricky little beast, you know. The moment you say, okay, well, maybe feelings are intelligent, maybe this sadness is intelligent. Now the mind, it says, give me that intelligence. I want that intelligence now. You know, how do I get to the intelligence? How do I access the intelligence? You know, sadness, give me intelligence.
Correct.
So, and this is fascinating to notice as well, all these little tricks of the mind. You know, this is often what I talk about. You know, the mind is inherently a seeker. It's always trying to move away from this moment to the next moment. The next moment will be better. The next moment will be more peaceful. The next moment will be more blissful. The next moment, in the next moment, there'll be intelligence. So in a way, you see, it's like the mind is almost designed somehow to run away from this moment. To somehow it distrusts. Somehow it distrusts what's actually appearing. This is why I talk about the deepest acceptance. Often we think of acceptance as something that we have to do. You know, that's often how we think of acceptance. Oh, I need to accept this moment. We think of acceptance as something that I have to do. I have to take this sadness, and I have to accept this sadness, for example. But so easily, this could be another one of the mind's tricks. You know, okay, I'm gonna accept this sadness because secretly, I want the sadness to go away. You know, so in a sense, you've already rejected the sadness. You're saying, I'm going to accept the sadness. I'm going to accept the pain. I'm going to accept the fear. Because secretly, you want the sadness, the pain, the fear to go away. So secretly, you've already... That's the beginning of resistance already. So the way I talk about acceptance, I talk about it in a slightly different way. This is what I say in my book, is that acceptance, ultimately, it's not something that you do. Acceptance is actually who you are. And I think that needs a bit of unpacking. Acceptance is not something that you do. Acceptance is what you are. In a sense, and this might sound quite strange at first and difficult to grasp, in a sense, acceptance has already happened. In a sense, this moment is already accepted. Let me just quickly explain that. You could say that the ocean accepts all of its waves. The ocean accepts all of its waves. It's not because the ocean tries to accept its waves. The ocean is its waves. The ocean is its waves. And that's the deeper meaning of acceptance. So if you see yourself as a vast ocean of awareness, if you are the ocean, if you are the vast ocean of awareness, then every thought that appears, every sensation, every feeling is like a wave appearing and disappearing in you. So a thought is a wave, a sensation is a wave, a feeling is a wave. And when you really just take a look at your present experience, and this is often what I just invite people to do, and I think this is the essence of meditation, of true meditation, is taking a fresh look at your present experience, coming out of your story, what happened yesterday and what might happen tomorrow, and just getting back in touch with what's actually happening now. And when you just take a fresh look at your experience right now, what do you actually find? You know, you may find thoughts popping up right now, images, all kind of images about the past, about the future. You may find all kinds of sensations in the body happening right now. You know, tingling in the toes, or maybe a tense, contracted feeling in the stomach, or some kind of pressure in the shoulders. And again, this is what I mean about beginning where you are. It's just noticing. I think this can really be the beginning of healing for so many people. It's something so simple, you know. Just beginning to notice what's actually here. In a way, it's like coming out of the dream of your life, my past, my future, my problems, my you know, what may or may not happen tomorrow, and getting back in touch with the place where life actually happens, the place where all creativity is, the place where all intelligence is. But to go back to your question, you see, we're not doing this in order to get something. We're not trying to get intelligence. We're not trying to get solutions. We're not trying to get answers. We're not trying to get anything. We're just beginning to notice the present moment just with a spirit of curiosity and openness. You know, when we're not even trying to get acceptance in a way. We're not going into this investigation thinking I'm going to get something out of this. Now, all of that may come. The intelligence, the answers may come. The feelings of peace may come. Feelings of bliss may come, of course. But that's not. We're not going into this moment. We're not taking a fresh look at the moment in order to manufacture, you know, some feeling. We're honoring that. I think this is a very simple way of saying it. We're beginning to honor what's actually here, you know, even if what's here right now is uncomfortable. So we begin to notice. We start again. We begin to notice in this moment the thoughts that are here, all the images floating around. You know, we start to notice sensations in the body. We start to notice the sounds in the room. We start to notice whatever is here, you know, and it's like beginning, as I said, it's beginning to honor what is actually here. I think if the solutions are going to come, you know, if the clarity is going to come, if the peace is going to come, it's not going to come by, I'm going to go out there and get peace. You know, that's the mind's version. It's going to come through this honoring, this getting back in touch with what's actually here, this honoring what's actually here, beginning to really acknowledge the present moment. And that's, for me, I look back in my life, especially over the past few years, and that's really where all the healing really came from. It wasn't me trying to, you know, get somewhere. It was about getting back in touch with what I was actually experiencing, what I was actually feeling, even if in the moment there was a great wave of discomfort. You know, so this is the invitation. This is what I call the invitation. Instead of trying to fix this moment, instead of trying to perfect this moment, instead of trying to even change this moment, instead of trying to get all the answers right now, can it be okay right now to not have the answers? Can it be okay right now to not know? You know, can it be okay right now for sadness to be here? Instead of rushing to try to convert sadness into happiness, just for a moment, can we sit with sadness? You know, can we honor sadness, honor the appearance of sadness? Because sadness is also life. Can we honor the appearance of discomfort instead of rushing to convert discomfort into what we think is its opposite, comfort? Can we honor life as it appears as discomfort? Fear. And sorry, go on.
I'm curious to know a little bit more when you use this word honor. I feel touched by the word. There's something in it that uh-huh. touches me. But are you saying that I'm honoring those feelings simply by being with them?
Simply noticing them. You know, noticing them. It sounds so simple, but the truth is we so rarely do it. Even notice what's happening in the present moment, even being aware of a feeling is the beginning of real healing, because, you know, so often we're so caught up in plans and trying to get the solutions and trying to change the past. The mind is so occupied so often with it's trying to fix things for you, right? That's, you know, you could say that's the mind's job. The mind, it's not the enemy. Thought is not the enemy. I think so many spiritual teachings over the years have made it sound like the mind or thought is some kind of enemy, but actually, that's what I say sometimes. It's quite innocent. It's just trying to fix things for you. it's trying to fix the past and it's trying to fix the future. That's what it thinks you need, right? So thought, in any given moment, thought will be way off in the past trying to change something, you know, with regret and guilt, and I wish that had been different, I wish I'd said that differently, I wish that hadn't happened. So in a way, thought it's trying to fix the past for you. It's a beautiful way of seeing it, you know. It takes the stops thought being an enemy, and it's trying to do that with the future as well. It's trying to manipulate the future, change the future, trying to create the perfect future. So often thought is, it's so far away in a way from this moment. So just beginning to notice, actually what's here right now is a sense of sadness. I mean, that's the beginning of honoring yourself, actually. Honoring life, honoring the moment. There's sadness here. You know, just to notice sadness, to acknowledge that it's here. Sometimes I talk about it's another lovely metaphor, the child at the door. So if you imagine, you know, that there's a knock on your front door and you open it and there's a child there, and the child is cold and starving and frightened, and this poor child, they've been wandering the earth maybe for millions of years maybe, and they've turned up on your doorstep, you know, and in this metaphor, this child could be a thought, it could be a sensation, it could be a feeling, it could be a feeling of sadness, it could be a feeling of fear, it could be a feeling of confusion, it could even be a feeling of despair. You know, this child can take many forms. So just to notice the child, because so often we don't even open that door, you know, we don't even open the door. We're so busy trying to, you know, whatever we're doing, caught up in past and future, we don't even open the door. So just beginning to open the door is huge, to acknowledge, a child is here. And then in a way to begin to ask the child, well, who are you? Who are you? To sit with that feeling, not with the intention of, you know, trying to get rid of it. Because that's so often what we do, as I said, the child appears at the door and the feeling of sadness appears. And we're trying to accept it because secretly we want to get rid of it without even getting to know the child. Because, I mean, this is really the teaching that maybe these are all your children. You know, that all these feelings, these thoughts, these feelings, even sadness, even fear, even anger, even despair, even confusion, maybe these are not your enemies. Maybe these are not threats to you. Maybe these are parts of you that just want a bit of, in the beginning, they just want to be seen. You know, that's a huge beginning, is just acknowledging the child. Yes, I see you. I see you. I think healing has to begin there. I think there's no way around that. You know, I think healing has to begin with, I see you. I acknowledge that you're there on my doorstep. In this moment, I don't quite know who you are. I don't know what to do with you. But you're here.
Now, Jeff, one of the things I'm curious about is how we move from accepting this child, accepting whatever painful experience we're having, to what you call, quote-unquote, the deepest acceptance, to this deeper recognition that this is already, in your language, been accepted because it's... How do we move from, okay, I'm with this difficult thing, to, this has now become a doorway into the subtitle of your book, Radical Awakening in Ordinary Life. How does this become a doorway for us, this accepting of a difficult experience?
Mm-hmm. So what the deepest acceptance means is actually, on some level, you have already accepted this child. On some level, you've already allowed this child in. Acceptance... is not something that you have to do, you know. So I think it's a nice way of talking about it. You know, a lot of spiritual teachings talk about how we resist the present moment. You know, a lot of spiritual teachings say, you know, we should accept the present moment, we should allow the present moment, we shouldn't resist the present moment. So what happens then is we try to accept, we try to say yes, you know, we try to not resist. And we can end up being so hard on ourselves, because then acceptance becomes the new goal, right? So then in any given moment, you know, we're experiencing some discomfort and we're trying to accept it and it hasn't gone away yet. And we try harder to accept it and it's still there. And then the mind is like, oh, well, thought says, well, why is it still here? Why isn't it going away? Oh, I've tried to accept it. I failed to accept it. Why can't I accept it? So you see, the mind automatically turns everything into a goal. It will even turn acceptance into a goal, something that I have to do, some like new standard, you know. And then if I'm not accepting in the moment, I start to judge myself, you know, as, oh, I'm failing to accept. I'm a really bad spiritual seeker because I'm supposed to be accepting right now. So quickly this feeds into our story of failure. You know, I'm not good enough. I fail to accept this moment. You know, and so easily we can get into this cycle of resisting resistance. You know, so we find ourselves resisting sadness, for example. And then the mind says, oh, well, you know, this resistance shouldn't be here. This resistance should not be here. So so quickly we make even resistance into the new enemy. So acceptance becomes the new goal. So maybe the goal isn't, you know, to have $10 million in the bank account anymore. The new goal is acceptance. But you start to see it's all part of the same mechanism. The mind wants anything other than this moment. So the mind doesn't want this moment. It wants acceptance. So it's made acceptance into something outside of this moment. So, and I used to get myself years ago into this cycle. You know, I was trying so hard to accept, and I was becoming so exhausted trying to accept this moment, and I found so much resistance in my experience, and I was resisting resistance, and just became this big mess. Until I discovered this deepest acceptance. So, as I was saying before, everything that appears in your experience, it's a wave. A thought is a wave, a sensation is a wave, a feeling is a wave. Even resistance, it's just another wave. It's another wave of experience. It's a wave of life. So what you are is the vast ocean. What you are is the vast ocean. Some people use the word awareness. Some people use the word consciousness. Some people use the word spirit or God or space. I mean, in the end, I don't really think it matters what word we use. But everyone has this basic sense of that they are aware. That there's something here that is always present. And that right now it's aware of thoughts, it's aware of sensations, it's aware of feelings. It's even aware of resistance. So this is the key. This is really what I wanted to get to. If you're aware of sadness, for example, if you're aware of a wave, if you're aware of sadness, the very fact that you can be aware of sadness, that shows that who you really are is bigger than sadness. Who you really are is not trapped within the sadness. That there's, you know, in the very act of being aware of noticing, of acknowledging sadness, what you're also acknowledging is that actually who you really are is bigger than sadness. It's who you really are is vast. It's who you really are is not trapped within that sadness. This is really the core of it. Who you truly are is not trapped within the sadness. The very fact that you can be aware of sadness suggests that there's already some intelligence operating here. There's already some awareness here. Who you truly are is not inside the sadness. You're not confined to the sadness. You're not trapped within the sadness. You're not limited to the sadness. There's already that space. So in the very act of noticing sadness, what you're really saying is that what I am is bigger than sadness. What I am is the space for sadness. So I am not in sadness. I am not trapped in sadness. Actually, the truth of my experience is that sadness is appearing within me. I am not trapped within sadness. Sadness is within me. So you're starting to notice yourself, recognize yourself as the space for sadness, the room. You are the room. This is a lovely way of seeing it as well. You are the room for sadness. You're the room for fear. You're not trapped within fear. The very fact that you can be aware of fear, that you can see fear, that you can know fear, suggests that you're not trapped within it. You are the room for it. So, and this is really the essence of meditation as well, is it's coming to see that actually that you're very roomy, you know, you're very spacious. You're the room for thoughts. You're the room for feelings. You're the room for sensations. You're the room for this feeling of despair. What you are is it's very much like the room that you're in right now. This is also a lovely metaphor. I love to speak in metaphors because I think metaphors kind of silence the mind. You know, it's like metaphors and poetry. They kind of quiet the mind down. They operate on a very different level. You know, it's a less kind of rational level. So it's lovely to use poetry and metaphor when speaking about this, because I think really we are poetic beings. You know, you are poetry, really. So so who you really are is very much like the room that you're in right now. The room that you're in right now, whether it's a living room or a classroom or a studio, or it's a church hall, or it's wherever you're listening to this. I don't know why you'd be listening to this in a church hall, but what you are, who you really are, is very much like this room. So the room that you're in, it's always there. It's always present. It holds all of the contents. So all kinds of things happen in this room. You know, over the years, all kinds of people have walked in and out of this room. You know, there's been laughter and tears in this room. There's been pain in this room. There's been boredom in this room. There's been bliss in this room. There's been all kinds of people have come in and out of this room. All kinds of animals, maybe. All kinds of there's been light and darkness in this room. You know, it's like this room that I'm in right now. You know, at night, the lights go off in here, but the room still remains. And then in the morning, the lights come on and there's activity in the room, but the room itself is always present. The room itself isn't threatened or damaged by whatever happens in the room. You know, if there's pain in the room, if there's bliss in the room holds that. The room allows that, in a sense. If there's laughter in the room, if there's tears in the room holds that. The room doesn't, this is the key, you know, the room doesn't say laughter is allowed, but tears are not allowed in this room. The room itself doesn't say pain is not allowed in this room, but only pleasure is allowed. You know, the room doesn't say that in this room you have to feel good all the time. The room doesn't say, you know, in me these thoughts are not allowed or these sensations are not allowed. The room doesn't say that. The room just provides the space. The room just holds. The room just holds anything that wants to come in the room and anything that wants to leave the room. So this is a wonderful metaphor for who you are.
Now, Jeff, what I notice is that when you share these metaphors with me, whether it's the metaphor of the room or the wave in the ocean, I go with you and I become the room, I become the ocean. What I'm curious about is, in your own life, do you have experiences where you suddenly find yourself not feeling like the room, but feeling like, you know, a chair that's being kicked or something like that? And if so, is there something you do in those moments to shift yourself back into this more expanded way of being?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the old myths about awakening, you know, is that awakening is all about being this perfect room in which only nice, happy, pleasant content walks in, right? You know, I think that's one of the old myths about enlightenment is that, you know, when you're awakened or when you're enlightened or whatever, when you remember who you truly are as the room, only the nice stuff is going to come into the room. Only the bliss is going to walk into the room. Only the well-behaved children are going to come visit you. In a way, it's exactly the opposite. You know, this has been my experience over the years. Years ago, I certainly had that illusion that now I'm awakened. This is what I used to believe. Now I'm awakened. Only nice stuff is going to happen. And I was totally wrong. Life, you know, in its infinite compassion came along and destroyed those myths. Actually, knowing yourself as the room is knowing now in a way that anything can walk in. Anything can walk in. All of your children are now can now walk in. You know, so of course, over the years, you know, all kinds of really intense, uncomfortable, painful feelings have come into the room. And
but do you ever mistake that you're those feelings? You've lost track, and if so, like even
sure,
for
yeah,
yeah I, like oh my God, I feel like the chair being kicked. I don't feel like the room. I am the chair being kicked. And then, is there some way that you make a shift? Is there something you do or something that naturally happens?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I have to say these days it doesn't stick for as long as it used to. You know, but sure, I mean, over the past few years I've experienced all kinds of things in my own personal life. You know, physical pain I've faced, you know, relationship breakups. And I mean, the past couple of years, you know, my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and that's been an incredible journey. You know, meeting him as his whole world falls away, and then meeting myself as I'm with him. You know, when feelings of frustration arise and feelings of you know real intense sadness, grief sometimes. So you know, it's true. Over the past few years, I have been there have been times when the feelings have been incredibly intense, and I think that's one of the old myths of awakening as well, is that somehow life becomes, you know, less intense. You know, you become more protected from life, and my experience has been the complete opposite. Actually, everything is more intense these days. Sadness is more sad. You know, pain is more painful. You know, everything is somehow more intense because I'm just not pushing it away so much anymore. You know, so when sadness does come to visit, it's you know, it's like a tidal wave of sadness. And so, I mean, of course, over the past few years, there have been times where I've completely forgotten the room, and I've been totally identified as the contents. I think that's a really lovely way of talking about suffering. Suffering basically is the forgetting of your true nature as the vast room, as the embrace, the total embrace of content. And it's identification with something smaller than you, because who you are is vast. Who you are as the room is vast, and all of the contents that arises, thoughts, sensations, feelings, they're small in a way. They're small compared to who you really are. But so, suffering is some kind of forgetting of your true nature as the room, and some kind of holding on to the contents. You know. So of course, over the past few years, you know, sometimes the waves have been very intense. But what I'm always able to do these days somehow is just sit with whatever feeling comes up. So you just sit with the discomfort. That's the one thing. It's one thing I've learned over the years is somehow to trust. Actually, I think it really what we're talking about here is some kind of crazy trust in life. You know, to trust that even if right now in this moment there's intense discomfort. And the mind is saying, you know, get rid of it, run away from it. The mind is trying to fix it. And blah, blah, blah. You know, in truth, perhaps that feeling is, it's not a mistake. Perhaps in this moment, this is not against life. This is life. That's the one insight that for me, it really changes everything. And that's the thing I keep on coming back to, is that this is not against life. This is life. You know, that's like that for me. That's the core insight. This is not against life. This is life. Mm-hmm. This is not against life. This is life. You know, even if it's a very intense feeling, you know, and this is what I do is, you know, say there's very intense grief. You know, say sitting with my father, and he's having a really bad day, and he's completely forgetting who I am and forgetting this and forgetting that, you know, and I notice a wave of grief. It's like I don't turn away from it. I think that's the mm-hmm. number one thing. I don't turn away from it. I on some level, I think I've made some kind of commitment, some kind of crazy commitment mm-hmm. to not turn away. And maybe that's somehow built into us, you know. Maybe in it, I think maybe we are that commitment. I think maybe we are that commitment, and we just forget over the years, or it's drummed out of us. But I think we are that commitment. We are the commitment to not turn away. So turning away actually violates our own commitment, maybe that we made millions of years ago to our actual embodied experience. Mm-hmm. If I turn away from this grief, I am turning away from all of life. If I turn away from this grief, this wave in the ocean of myself, if I turn away from this grief, perhaps I'm turning away from all of existence. I'm turning away from God. I'm turning away from, you know, the Big Bang and the dinosaurs and all the planets and the stars and the flower. Perhaps I'm turning away from the whole thing. Perhaps this grief, perhaps this is not against life. It's not against me. It's not against love. Perhaps this is some strange expression of love. Perhaps it's a kind of language, I think, that we've never learned how to speak it or how to understand it. You know,
crazy trust in life.
Some kind of crazy
trust.
Crazy trust. Some kind of crazy trust in life. And I've just found over the years, you know, that to stay, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's really burning, you know. Even if every fiber of your being tells you to run away, to acknowledge that, not to pretend that you don't feel like running away, to acknowledge that as well. Yes, I'm staying, and yes, I feel like running away right now. And to stay there, in that place, to stay in the messy kind of melting pot of this moment, without the answers, without knowing how to fix things, just to stay. You know, even if you feel like leaving, to stay with that, and. That's what I've learned over the years, I think, is
beautiful
to stay. And somehow whenever I've been able to do that, and sometimes it takes a few moments, a few minutes, a few hours, a few days, but eventually everything starts to break apart, you know, and the tension lifts. And then I learn, oh, actually, you know, when that wave appears again, that wave of grief appears again, you know, it's maybe it's there to be embraced, to be stayed with, to be met. It's that child at the door, just wanting some kind attention and love, even if in the moment you don't know how. When the child says, look, just stay with me. Stay with me for a moment. And we say to the child, I don't know how. And the child says back, well, that's okay. Stay anyway.
Jeff, thank you. Thank you for bringing your crazy trust and commitment. And, you know, I always like talking with you so much.
Thank you so much, Tammy. Thank you for allowing me to bring my crazy trust to Sounds True.
Yeah, baby. With Sounds True, Jeff Foster has published a new book called The Deepest Acceptance, radical awakening in ordinary life, and it's also an audio series of teachings. And Jeff Foster will also be a featured presenter at our 2013 Wake Up Festival in August in the Rocky Mountains. SoundsTrue.com. Many voices, one journey. Thanks for being with us.